Last time I spoke, by the way, thank you again, Bob. I really appreciated last week your sharing and look forward to your follow-up in a couple weeks. We're going to work that in a couple weeks. As soon as we finish up Genesis, we're going to come back to you. And I'm confident now that I can do it in 2 weeks. So, and this is one of the 2 weeks. We started off in Genesis chapter 49 last time, and we were going through the 12 prophecies that Jacob had over his 12 sons that I started out by telling you they don't make a lot of sense unless you look at them as a group. And if you look at them as a group, you see a thread of prophecy going through all 12 of these statements that Jacob made to his sons. And I think we got through, I think, 7 last time. And I'm just going to touch on them. I'm not going to go through them all in detail again, but just to get a little continuity between them and this week, Reuben was the firstborn, and that his life, the prophecy about Reuben, or the statement about Reuben, spoke to the spiritual fornication of the Jews. You know, he physically had fornication, and it's a picture of how the Jews would so quickly turn their back on God. As soon as they got to Mount Sinai and Moses was up on the mountain getting the law, what did they do down at their camp? They created these golden calves, and they're dancing around and worshiping and all this. No sooner had God brought them through the Red Sea than they did something as silly as this. So this was a picture of what was going to happen, and that was the first phase. And then he talked about Simeon and Levi, and those two, you may remember, were the two that had murdered all the people in the town of Shechem after their sister had been violated by one man. They went in and murdered the whole town and caused Jacob's whole family to have to move out of the area for fear of their life. And that was a picture of the dispersion of the Jews that would also happen. They would also have to be dispersed later on. You may remember they're dispersed by the Babylonians. So this, from the time of the idol worshiping all the way up to the dispersion to Babylon, there was idol worship by the Jews all through the Old Testament. We read about it. You read about the Asherah poles and the Molech and all these crazy things they're doing. But you see the thread starting to form with the prophecy about the Jews. The next was Judah. And Judah spoke about the deliverance of the Jews, because Jesus, of course, came from the tribe of Judah. And he would deliver them spiritually from their bondage. He would sacrifice his life for not only the Jews, but for us also. That would be the next event that occurred in this period of time. And then they spoke about Zebulun. Jacob talked to Zebulun, and that was a picture of the exiled period. And this was done during the Romans' time in AD 70. The Romans dispersed and exiled the Jews all over the face of the earth. And they remained exiled until right around 1900. And then there was a movement, and nobody knows who started it, why it got started, but it's called the Zionist movement. And you can look it up and read about it. But the Zionist movement, basically, God started changing the hearts of the Jews all over the world, and they all started coming back to Israel, and nobody knows why. But that was the end of the dispersion, and started to gather the people back to Jerusalem, and another 50 years later, they would actually get their own country after World War II. But that was spoken of in the prophecy about Zebulun. Issachar was the next one we covered. And that speaks to an exploited people. Over this entire period of the dispersion, even though the Jews were all over the world, they were exploited. And we see that. The most vivid picture is the Holocaust itself. And then we went to Dan, and I think we left off with Dan, and that spoke of the rise of the Antichrist. So that actually kind of projects us into the future. We're beyond current history now. We're not through with the 12 sons, but on Dan, we looked to the future, and it spoke to, like I said, the rise of the Antichrist. And Bob pointed out to me a couple weeks ago when we left off with Dan that the last time the 12 tribes are mentioned in the Bible, in the book of Revelation, the tribe of Dan is not mentioned as one of the 12. It's replaced instead by Manasseh, one of Joseph's two sons. Why does God do this? I don't know. But it's just interesting that the Jews believe that the Antichrist would come from this particular tribe. Now, that's kind of where we left off. So we're going to pick up in verse 20 of chapter 49, and that is with Asher. And the scriptures tell us in verse 20, Asher's food will be rich. He will provide delicacies fit for a king. Where does this fit in with the timeline? Well, if we keep going with the same timeline, the Antichrist has already been at this point revealed. So what's the next thing that happens after the Antichrist is revealed? You may recall from earlier teachings, this is the time when the Jews leave Jerusalem and they flee to the city of Petra. And Scripture tells us that they're going to be supernaturally provided for inside the city of Petra during this last 3.5 years. So it's fitting that verse 20 would say, Asher's food will be rich. He will provide delicacies fit for a king. God is going to provide their substance while they're in here. And apparently they're going to eat pretty good while they're in Petra because it's going to be supernaturally provided. So that's what it seems to speak of. This time, period of time, this last half of the tribulation when the Jews are safely tucked away in Petra. And then it says, verse 21, Naphtali is a doe set free that bears beautiful fawns. Another version, which I think is more appropriate for what we're talking about, is it says Naphtali is a doe set free that gives goodly words. Sounds like giving advice, giving valuable advice, that type of a thing. How would that fit into the prophetic history or projections of Israel? Well, there's something else that's going to happen during the second half of that tribulation. While the Jews are in Petra, safely tucked away, there's going to be 144,000 young Jewish men who are going to be dispersed throughout the entire world. And what are they going to be doing? They're going to be giving goodly words. They're going to be evangelists. They're going to be one of the few ways that the people that are present on earth at that time will hear the good news. Because remember, the rapture would already have occurred. We would not be here. These 144,000 are going to be the evangelists during the second half of the tribulation. So, do you see the prophetic hand of God going through these 12 sons and showing what's going to happen specifically to the nation of Israel in the last days? Well, that still leaves a couple of sons. Joseph is the next one in verse 22. What do we know about Joseph reading the last 12 chapters or so of Genesis? We've seen over and over and over again, Joseph is a picture of Jesus. So it's no surprise when we read these verses, starting with verse 22, you can almost substitute the name of Joseph and put in the name of Jesus. And listen to it and see if you don't see Jesus shining through this. Joseph is a fruitful vine near a spring whose branches climb over a wall. With bitterness, archers attacked him, and they shot at him with hostility. But his bow remained steady, his strong arm stayed limber, because the hand of the mighty one of Jacob, because of the shepherd, the rock of Israel, because of your father's God who helps you, because of the Almighty who blesses you with blessings of the skies above, blessings of the deep springs below, blessings of the breast and womb. Your father's blessings are greater than the blessings of the ancient mountains, than the bounty of the age-old hills. Let all those who rest on the head of Joseph, on the brow of the prince, let all these rest on the head of Joseph, on the brow of the prince among his brothers. So there I think you see Jesus being pictured through Joseph. And what would Jesus be doing at this point in time, historically or prophetically? We know that when the Jews are in Petra, that at some point in time, at the very end, they're going to be triumphantly led out of Petra. Who's going to lead them out? Jesus. I think this little passage that I just read is indicative of Jesus leading out the Jews from Petra and victoriously marching where? Back to Jerusalem, a 200-mile journey. And on this journey, there's going to be a great battle. You hear about Armageddon in when you read about prophecy. There's not really going to be a battle, I don't think, in Armageddon. It's just where the forces gather. They gather in Armageddon. Then they march down to Petra with the idea or the intention of somehow or another getting in there and destroying these Jews. But what happens is the tables are turned. Jesus comes back, and then the Jews march out of Petra, and with Jesus leading, they attack, which takes us to the last one in verse 27. Benjamin is a ravenous wolf. In the morning, he devours the prey. In the evening, he divides the plunder. I think this speaks of this march back to Israel, where the Jews finally become victorious militarily. They've been on the short end of the stick so much of history, but from this point on, they become victors. And they're not only winning the battle, but they're picking up the spoils as they go along. So that's the way I see these 12 statements about the sons of Jacob and how it threads into a prophetic statement about the future of Israel. And then it says in verse 28, all these are the 12 tribes of Israel. And that's the first time that expression is used in the Bible. For the first time, Jacob says, okay, from this point on, there's going to be a significance in the 12 tribes. They're going to be identified tribe by tribe. Then it goes on to say, and this is what their father said to them when he blessed them, giving each the blessing appropriate to him, which is the ones we just went through. Then he gave them these instructions. I'm about to be gathered to my people. Bury me with my fathers in the cave in the field of Ephron the Hittite, in the cave in the field of Machpelah, near Mamre in Canaan, which Abraham bought along with the field as a burial place from Ephron the Hittite. There Abraham and his wife Sarah were buried. There Isaac and his wife Rebekah were buried. And there I buried Leah. The field and the cave in it were bought from the Hittites. You may remember from a week or two earlier, he had made Joseph promise to do this. Now with his 12 sons around, he wants all 12 of them to promise. This is very important to Jacob, that he be buried back in his homeland, back next to Leah, which kind of closes out the story of Jacob and Leah and Rachel. You remember he went to work for Rachel. He was smitten with Rachel back in his youth. But over time, it appears that Leah, the beauty that was inside of her, shone more and more through her, and his heart became more and more attached to Leah than it did to Rachel. What do we know about Rachel other than her being beautiful? She was a whiner and a complainer. Every time you read her talking, she's complaining about something. So I think over time, Jacob was more attracted to Leah because of her inward beauty, and that's where he said, I wanted to be buried. I want to be buried by her. And then verse 33, when Jacob had finished giving instructions to his sons, he drew his feet up into his bed, he breathed his last, and he was gathered to his people. This tells me, as we close out chapter 49 of Genesis, that death is nothing to fear. It is life is nothing but a preparation for eternity. If we look at it as anything more than that, we're misguided. If we look at it as nothing but gathering as much money as you can and having as much fun as you can, you've missed the boat. Life is a preparation for eternity. And death is nothing more than the transition between life and eternity. So Jacob did everything he was supposed to do, and he said, now it's time to make my transition into eternity. So I think it's a beautiful way to end the story. He dies a peaceful death, transitions into heaven. And it reminds me of the words of Jesus that we read in the book of John. Do not let your hearts be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house, there are many rooms. I am going there to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will surely come back and get you and take you to be with me where I am. Those are the words of comfort that we all have. Just remember, as we close out this chapter, life is a preparation for eternity. That's the way we should be looking at it. Now, that's the end.